This is Nurse Guzer News for the week of October 8th, 2018, and I'm your host, Rebecca Hartman Baker. Today's guest is Lisa Gerhardt. Lisa is an HPC data consultant in the Data and Analytics Services Group. She has a PhD in physics, but almost became a geologist, except that she's terrible at reading maps. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
Great. So today's topic is file systems at NERSC. So I know there's a bunch of different file systems at NERSC, and users might get confused about what's what. So can we start with just an overview of the different file systems here at NERSC?
Sure. That's a good question. So we have four main file systems here at NERSC and then several auxiliary file systems. I'll start at the top with like the one with the fastest I/O and kind of go down from there. So at the top of the hierarchy, we have our burst buffer, and that's SSD drives, so they're super fast, and it's about 2 petabytes of space. It's available only on Cori. Very fast. It's got 1.7 terabytes per second of aggregate I/O. So that means if all these guys were going and writing at once, you'd get 1.7 terabytes. You're not going to see this number as a user, but these numbers are reflective of the relative performance, the total aggregate I/O. So this is available. You stage your data in when you're running a job, and you work with it. You take advantage of the super fast reads from the SSDs, and then when you're done, you can stage it back to scratch. You can also ask for a permanent reservation if you've got a chunk of data you're going to be working with again and again and again. You can keep it resident on the burst buffer for a while. That way you don't have to stage it back and forth. And we've had a number of users who are very successful using this, who see large speedups just by virtue of moving to the burst buffer system. They don't change any of their code. But there are ways you can also change your code to optimize to get even better, even more usage out of the burst buffer. Then moving down to the next tier, we have our scratch file systems. So these are Lustre file systems. So Cori has a scratch file system that's mounted on both Cori and Edison. And Edison has a scratch file system that's just local to itself. And for both of these are your next best choice after the burst buffer in terms of I/O. They're super fast. They're optimized for reading from the computes. And each user has an individual directory on there that they can store data in for a short time. And then stepping down the tree even further, we have what we call our project file system. It's also called the NERSC Global File System. It has a whole bunch of names because it's been around for a while. This is a different software. It's called GPFS. And this is intended for longer-term data retention. This is for groups that have data that they want to share. So every project, every repository has a directory on our project file system, which is usually the name of the repository, you know, M15 something something. And in it, that has group write and read permissions. So this is where you want to put data that you want to share with your whole group. And it's visible from all the crays from Cori and Edison. And then moving down farther to our slowest tier, which is also our biggest tier, we have the HPSS tape archive. This is a sort of a mixed media system. It's made up of a fast disk cache, and then it's backed up by tape. So what happens is that the data is ingested, it goes in very quickly to the disk cache, and then over time, if it's not accessed again, it gets migrated out to tape, just automatically on the system. And this pool is very large, so the burst buffer, like I mentioned, is about 2 petabytes. The Cori Scratch is about 30 petabytes. Project Directory is about 6 petabytes. HPSS is 130 petabytes. So we can, because we're not paying for high I/O, we can pay for large capacity. And that's generally what we do, is we step down the tier. You're trading off performance for capacity as you move through the systems. So those are the four main guys. And then we have a couple of auxiliary file systems. We have Global Common File System. That's also GPFS. It's very similar to Project. Everybody gets a group directory on there. It's intended for software installation on the system. So the file system there is optimized for much smaller files. On Project, it's intended for large-scale data movement, so it has a very large block size, which makes large data transfers and reads and writes more efficient. But when you're dealing with software where you have lots of little tiny files and kilobyte and megabyte size, it doesn't make sense to have a big block size because it makes compiling really slow because you have to read all these huge blocks in. So it's got small blocks, and it's also mounted read-only on the compute nodes, which means you can take advantage of a lot of caching. So this is a good place to put your software stacks. That's what it's intended for. And then we have several other group-specific GPFS file systems. We have a sponsored storage system where if you have very large storage needs, you can come in and purchase storage in this sponsored storage. We also have several dedicated scientific file systems for instance, for the JGI.
Okay. So with all these file systems, how do you decide which file system to use for different things?
So it definitely depends on what you're doing. If you're doing anything that's at all I/O bound, very I/O intensive, my first recommendation would be to use the burst buffer if you can, unless you have a specific kind of calls that you're doing that don't work on the burst buffer. This is always going to be your best bet. And it's really easy to stage data in and out. We have special Slurm directives you can add to your batch job script to move the data in and move it back out. So that's fairly transparent. If for whatever reason you don't feel like dealing with the burst buffer, but you're still very I/O bound, then the local scratches for the systems are your best bet. Cori scratch is definitely going to be way more performant. The disadvantage of using the burst buffer and the scratch file system, however, is that they're ephemeral. Scratch system is purged. The burst buffer, you have to stage it in and out or arrange a permanent reservation. If you have long-term data that you're going to be analyzing and you want to keep around and you want to share with your group, then the project file system is probably the best one for you. And if you're doing something with it that's really not very I/O bound, it may not be worth the effort to stage it to scratch. You may be able to just work with it on project. But generally, most of the time you'll get the best results if you're on scratch or burst buffer. If you have data that you need to keep for a while and share with your group, that's the project file system. And then HPSS is intended for long-term retention of unique data. So if you write a paper, perhaps the data set that you used to generate those results would be kept in HPSS in case you need to pull them out. Something like unique experimental data that can't be easily reproduced, you would keep that in HPSS. So this is unique data that is very hard to reproduce, you would keep in HPSS.
So are there any practical considerations when you're archiving files into HPSS?
You should definitely think about how you're going to want to get this data back out. If you're archiving, let's say you have experimental data, and when you pull it out, you generally need to get the data for the whole month, then it would make sense that you would bundle it into month bundles. Let me just back up a second and say that HPSS has sort of a sweet spot for file size. If you put in a lot of small files, let's say you have a directory with 10,000 files, and you put it into HPSS directly, when those go in there, they get migrated off to tape, and they get migrated automatically, and they could go to any tape anywhere. And then if you come and try and retrieve those 10,000 files, you're going to be doing lots and lots of tape mounts, and it's going to be very inefficient and take a long time and be very frustrating, even though these are pretty small files. So what you generally want to do is you want to bundle these guys up into bundles of a couple hundred gigabytes. So the reason why I'm not being very specific is that the sweet spot size changes as the size of the tapes change. So it's slowly getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It was around 100 gigabytes when I started. Now we're saying it's 200 or 300 gigabytes. So. But that's where you should aim, is a couple hundred gigabytes. And so the challenge becomes, how do you want to bundle this stuff up? So like I said, if you have a month of data and you generally need to look at it a whole month at a time, then you would do monthly bundles. If you have something like you might have, I don't know, calibration files spread across your entire data set, you might need to pull them all out, then maybe even though you have a different directory set on the file system, when you bundle them, you might want to put all these guys together if you're going to pull them out. And if you're just backing up in HPSS for a little while for security, like to back up your directory, then you might want to bundle up on the directory level for each one. But if you are doing something like that, you know, you eventually want to come and kind of curate your HPSS data and say, okay, I don't need this backup anymore, or I'm just going to put this away and not keep it going. So generally, the best thing to do is think about, how are you going to get your data back out? Why would I need to retrieve this? And that should guide the way in which you put your data into HPSS.
Okay, that's pretty sound advice. Thank you. So maybe you can help clarify something else for people. So HPSS accounting is pretty confusing. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's definitely not very clear. Typically at NERSC, we charge in units of repos, right? We have users, they acquire MPP usage, that repo that gets charged to their repo. And when you have space on the project directory, that also gets counted against your repository. But HPSS doesn't have any notion of any kind of group identity as files come in. They only know that a user has transferred X amount. They also don't keep sort of, it's very difficult to get running tallies out of it. So we rely on external databases, in this case NIM, to keep track of the accounting. We track the usage on a user basis, but we give awards on a repo basis. So we have to figure out a way to sort of reconcile these two. And so if you're a user and you're a member of multiple repositories, you have to decide how you want your charges to be split amongst them in NIM. And so you can go into NIM and you can see, you can change the, you'll see that the percentages initially are evenly split between all the repos you're a member of. And let's say you're really not active in some of these and all the data that you're putting in belongs to, I don't know, whatever repo, the blue repo, then you would set that to 100% and set the others to zero. And that would immediately propagate through in the charges of the space that you're putting in would be attributed to that repo. There's some fine caveats there in that data in HPSS stays around when a project goes away at NERSC, when it's not continued. We have a policy that says that we can move their data in the project file system into HPSS. We archive it and take it away. But we don't have a policy for removing data in HPSS, so data in HPSS is forever at this point. And so if you're a member of a repo that goes away and you have data that you're charging to that, and then that repo doesn't get continued, that data charge will be moved immediately amongst your other repos because you still have data in there. So that change can be sort of confusing. So when that happens, you'll suddenly see repos like shoot up above their quota. And you'll need to go in and figure out, do I really need this data anymore? Can I delete this or move it somewhere else?
Okay. Wow. It's a lot to think about.
It's a little complex.
Yeah. So now, are there tools or resources that can help me to transfer my data or know what I have stored or things like that?
Yeah, so we do have a bunch of sort of helper functions, helper things around at NERSC. And the main thing, one of the things we have is something called the Expert Queue. And this is available on Cori and Edison. And what it is it submits to this Learn Batch system, and you use it for transferring moving your data around, basically. Primarily people use it for archiving data in HPSS. And what you can do is, let's say you have a huge amount of data you need to move to HPSS, and you've scripted this up somehow, like you have a series of scripts where you'd like to do an HTAR and bundle everything to HPSS. You can submit these to this expert queue, and it will move them through in reasonable batches and distribute them across the nodes so that you don't have a single node getting overloaded by your transfers. And you can also use it to tie in with the existing batch system. So if you are running a job where you generate a whole big bunch of data and you want to immediately put a copy of that into HPSS, at the end of your job, you can fire off a job to the transfer queue to do this transfer, to move it into HPSS. And that'll run after your job is finished. And vice versa, I suppose, if you're staging the other way out, you can also run, stage off of the expert queue. So it's got a lot of utility there in that it helps you, it's sort of like a job schedule, it's a scheduler, and so it keeps you from having to keep track of your transfers and move things through. It'll move things through in a nice, easy, balanced way for NERSC.
All right, cool. So are there other types of tools that we have?
Yeah, so we also have, for instance, if you're moving a lot of data into and out of the center, we have data transfer nodes, which are optimized for data transfer, and they all have Globus endpoints on them. If you're not familiar with it, Globus is a software that lets you do large-scale data transfers between sites, so across the country from your home institution to NERSC, those sorts of things. You could also do it within NERSC. And Globus is really nice in that it lets you, it automatically parallelizes the transfer for you, and it keeps an eye on it. If it fails, it restarts it where it left off, and it will keep retrying if it gets broken up several times, and it will notify you when it's done or if there's a problem. So it does a lot of this automated sort of data movement stuff that you kind of used to have to do on your own, and it's really the fastest way to move data between two points right now.
I've heard about this data dashboard thing, so what is that?
Yeah, that's a new tool that we're developing here at NERSC. So especially with the project file system, with a shared file system, one of the problems that you have is when you hit the quota, it's very hard to tell. Like if you have like 40 or 50 people in your repo and you've hit the quota, it's just hard to tell who needs to clean up. Maybe everybody needs to clean up, maybe one or two. You could do like a find or a DU, but for a really large directory that takes a long time to return. So we have this data dashboard, which shows you the usage in the project directory. And it's broken down by user and by group. It tells you where you are in the quota. And so you can go there and you can get a quick look and see how things are looking for your project directory. See maybe who needs to clean up or what's going on. It also has this really cool, like, you can go in and you can browse through your files. So you can step through the directories. It has this little sunburst and you can go and step through and it'll show you like all the file children in there and their ages. And it'll give you things sorted by age also. So you can kind of get a feel for like, wow, I haven't looked at this file in project for 3 years. Maybe I can put it to HPSS or maybe I can delete it. You know, I mean, do I still need that? And then there's also some ways for groups to hook up and get into some automated permission enforcement. You know, because if you do, the project is supposed to be group readable and writable, but these things drift. If someone has a UMask set a certain way or they do untar something, you can like escape the Linux file permissions and end up with something that's not group readable anymore, which is a real pain if you're trying to share stuff. And it's hard to get those permissions right. So you can sign up to have us go through and every day just basically find all the files that have drifted from permissions and rectify that and sort of do the automated group permission enforcement. And in the future, we're going to have a number of other tools that will come out through this data dashboard that you can use to interact with the file system.
Oh, wow. That all sounds really cool.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, Lisa, what do you foresee in the near future here for the file systems at NERSC?
I see a lot of exciting stuff sort of coming our way. So we did a huge effort inside of NERSC to try and define our storage ideas for the next couple of years. We came up with this white paper called the Storage 2020, where we talked about one of the issues we see here. Like I talked about the four main layers of the file system, and you know, four is a lot to deal with, especially if you wrote a file somewhere and you can't remember where it is and you have 20 terabytes in every file system, it's easy to get stuff lost. So one of the things we'd really like to do is see if we can simplify these tiers and unify some of the tiers together in a sensible way. You know, and you see that already sort of with the burst buffer and Scratch, and that the burst buffer stages from Scratch. And we're taking a good look at the project and HPSS to see if those two could be unified in a sensible way. So that would present a simpler and easier to use picture at NERSC, and maybe take some of the sort of drudgery of file management off of the user. And then we're also looking at, we've got a lot of experimental data here, a lot of scientists who want to share their data with the community. And with larger groups, and they want to keep it around for many years. These are expensive simulations or expensive experiments. It takes a while to process it all. So we're looking at if we can enlarge the project tier and make it more friendly for long-term data retention. So those are two things coming down the pipe that I think are pretty exciting.
Oh yeah, that sounds really exciting. Okay, so switching gears, Lisa, how did you go from being a physics PhD to HPC data consultant in the data analytics services group?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I started out as a physicist, mostly doing data analysis. So we took our data down from the experiment, it came up here, and I was spending a lot of time analyzing it. So I spent a lot of time writing scripts, trying to get the jobs to run, trying to make things work. We had a very small allocation, so we had to like squeeze every little bit out of it that we could. I really liked that sort of constrained problem solving of, you know, you only have X resources and this particular thing, and you need to get this done, you know, so figure out how you can do this best and optimize your scripts so that they run. And my job right now is exactly the same thing, except I do that for many different people instead of just for myself. So that's really what appealed to me about doing this, is that I can keep doing the stuff that I love and see and still help move science forward.
So finishing up here, three things that you want NERSC users to know.
Yeah, so I think I want them to know that we have a file system for pretty much anything you want to do at NERSC, and all different kinds of I/O and retention patterns are possible here. So if you have something that needs to be done and you don't know how to do it, I would say that you should talk to us, open a ticket, send us an email, you know, and we'll help you figure out how to get it done. And the third thing is that in the future, file systems should become even simpler and easier to use here at NERSC.
All right, great. Thanks, Lisa, for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.